Hello, everyone. Welcome to the number one rated video podcast, The Random Show. And when I mean number one, I mean rated by the people in this room, which is the three of us.
Unanimously. Well, we Graham took some convincing.
Yeah. He had to pay him off.
Episode number 396.
That's right.
You are?
Kevin Rose.
I am.
Tim Ferriss. Why am I your talk guy? So if you haven't seen the show before, we are a couple fools. We talk about random stuff that we run into throughout our lives during the week, or sometimes weeks between these episodes, sometimes months between these episodes. Yeah. So it's all over the place. We hope you enjoy that. I'm acting like we're just starting the show for the first time.
I know, this is a very herky-jerky. I feel like we need... That's what you get for not drinking.
I know. I'm just like
we'll come
too
back
sober.
Kevin's too sober to be relaxed for our outing.
Thank you for the tea.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are we having?
Well, this that we have here is a ginger and turmeric tea, and it is from a company called Rishi, I think.
Rishi. They're in Oakland.
Are they really?
Yeah, I went over to their headquarters, actually.
Oh, cool. Yeah, because the other one is actually also from Oakland. Who knew Oakland was such a hotbed? This stuff right here is a stress-less tea. So we have the ginger and turmeric, and then this is rose petals, lemon balm, skullcap, and peppermint. I think we've synchronized our cycles.
Yeah,
kind of back on cramps. This is good stuff.
I do like the Rishi tea, as far as like if you're looking for just a $6 tea, and it's good quality. Like the founder, I met him. Yeah. He actually really cares about his product. He goes and sources the tea. It's not going to be like the artisanal, like hand-picked, like
artisanal.
You know what I'm talking about? Artisanal, like hand-picked, like high-end teas that you get at some places, but it's really good, and you can get it at Whole Foods.
I buy the ginger and turmeric by the box. I love it.
Yeah,
and it's a really good touch to add to almost any other type of tea. So I'll combine it oftentimes in the morning with pu'er tea, and overcomes a little of that sort of wet horse ass barnyard smell of the pu'er.
Yeah, pu'er can be a little
tangy.
Yeah.
So I want to thank M and Rob gave this to me as a gift. M and Rob of Forage, that is their company. This is a Heath Ceramics mug, and it has a very unusual construction to it. I think this was the first mug they became well known for, and it's because the owner wanted to be able to smoke and drink coffee at the same time.
Pretty badass. I mean, this is a throwback. Heath, for people that don't know, they're made in San Francisco. They've been around for a long time. So this was like back when smoking, people didn't think you could die from it. Like, I mean, they've been around since...
Or they just didn't care. There's still a lot of hipsters. It's sort of the defiance of death.
That's true. There still is.
With their plaid and skinny jeans. But what's happening, Kevin?
Lots, actually, since the last time we did one of these shows... Obviously, it's been... we haven't done one since New Year's, have we?
I think the last one was in November.
Yeah. In November?
Yeah.
Gosh, it's been a long time.
Months and months.
So I left Google Ventures. Mm-hmm. I was there... You know about this.
I do.
I was there for almost 3 years, actually, which is kind of crazy. And started a new company. Well, I started a new company. I was still at Google Ventures. And basically, the thing that I have a hard time with, and you know how this is, being like a multitasker that you are... As an entrepreneur and also an investor and sometimes an entrepreneur on multiple projects at the same time, it's like all of a sudden, you know, you wake up in the morning, you go have a coffee or two or three with founders trying to vet deals for Google Ventures. You go off and you work on your startup in the afternoon, and then like there's no time for anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, you go home, you have dinner, then you get back on your computer, and it's just like, I was just dying. It was like way too much stress. And honestly, I need the focus. I'm a little ADD, so like for me, focus is really key. And I just felt that at Google Ventures, I love the team over there. They're great folks. Graham still works there. They're awesome. But for me, I just like, if I'm going to do something, I have to be all in. I feel really bad when I'm sitting there and I have to tell my team, like, hey, I'm going to be gone the first half of today because I have a board meeting to go to or something else. So. I'm still helping my portfolio companies. I still have, you know, obviously a vested interest in their success or the various funds that I'm involved in. But so I stepped down. I'm just going to be an advisor to the fund now. So, you know, I'll bring them
deals. So you're full-time on the startup.
Yeah, full-time on the startup. I raised $5 million for it. So basically, that gives us enough runway.
Phone calling grandmas. Just
exactly. It was like a call-a-thon I had. Right. People calling in. That would be amazing. I wish you could raise cash like that. So basically, I went out and raised some money, and the whole pitch to the investors was that I want to go and try some really crazy things and have as many shots on goal as possible, just to try a bunch of different ideas. I think I talked about this when I was launching North initially, but in a previous podcast. But anyway, we've got five people. We're cranking, and you know, I mentioned my Watchville app, which is doing quite well. We keep breaking records almost every single day, which is nuts for usage.
Yeah.
And then I've got one other little app called Tiny. Not doing so well, probably kill it.
Yeah.
But the whole plan is just, honestly, is to aggressively kill stuff that isn't working and just go after the stuff that is working.
Yeah. Euthanize them while you can still just pea shooter.
Well, the problem with startups, and I had a really long discussion with a lot of VCs about this, is that typically when a company goes out and raises money, let's say they go out and raise $1.5 million, $2 million, they feel like when they raise it around a certain idea that they need to stick with that idea and really give it a shot. And don't get me wrong, there's been a lot of companies that I've seen them stick with an idea and it finally starts to gain some legs and then they have something that's a success in their hands. But I feel that, I think that...
You're full of feelings.
I know. Oftentimes, startups will stick with the idea for too long. And then all of a sudden, they burn through all their capital. They have to go out and raise a round, and it's going to be a down round, or they won't even be able to raise it at all. And I just want to not go down that path. I'd rather just like aggressively kill something rather than just be stuck down a rabbit hole that leads to nowhere. Mm-hmm. So that's the plan.
I like that plan.
Yeah, it's good. It feels good to be back in it. Like, honestly... I think that you and I, you go through these, like, at least I go through these waves of wanting to just, like, go out there and take on the world, and then all of a sudden you're just like, oh my gosh, it's so much work and stress, and then you kind of, like, dial it back a little bit, and then you go back in, you dial it back, and I think that, at least for me, when it comes to being a startup entrepreneur, after Dig, I needed a proper break, and so Google Ventures gave me that 3 years. I was able to reset, and now I don't feel burnt out. I can actually go in, you know, work an 8, 9, 10-hour day, and it just doesn't even, like, it doesn't feel like work. I'm just having fun again.
I think there's a big difference also between working on your own projects that you can take from start to finish with the help of a small team and helping portfolio companies. And I enjoy both, but I think it's very easy to get seduced into only helping other people build. But there's something so gratifying and invigorating about working on your own craft.
Yeah.
And for me, that's content. So the podcast, the audio podcast, has been so much fun for me. And it's given me a chance to develop a whole new set of skills around writing, basically, to take the one piece of it, which is researching, where I do all these interviews, and get better at that. So I've been, you know, studying all sorts of masters of that craft, ended up hiring a gent who does a lot of the research and prep for Inside the Actor's Studio to look at transcripts of some of my podcasts and help me to think about how to order things differently and so on. And that exploration has been so fun for me and is part of the reason that I'm really focusing on the writing again for the first time in many years, because I just blew a gasket. I mean, maybe not entirely analogous to Dig, but The 4-Hour Chef was such a traumatic monster of an experience, where it was like a 3-year project compressed into a year and a half, and then lost half of the team basically working on it. So I feel like after the last number of years of sort of cutting my teeth doing experiments with startups, I have the bandwidth and the enthusiasm to come back to the mothership a little bit and focus on that.
So the mothership is your writing.
Yeah.
What are you writing now?
I am...
Are you talking about just blog posts, or are you actually working
posts,
on another book?
I've been taking notes for another book, potentially, because I'm always like, no more books, no more books. And I'm like, oh my God, but that'd be such a great chapter.
Is it going to be another 4-hour book?
No. If I do another book, well, there's one actually that I am gathering materials for, which will be 4-hour work week related, because the 4-hour work week is coming up on its 10th anniversary in a few years, which is insane. And there's so many incredible stories of people who went from literally an idea to IPO with their companies, or people who have used the principles in the 4-hour work week in ways you would never guess. So actors who have used it to end up starring in Super Bowl commercials and all sorts of crazy stuff. And then dozens of amazing stories of families who've traveled the world. So I want to create a an encyclopedia of success stories and case studies showing the breadth and the variety of ways that you can implement this toolbox that is a 4-hour work week. So if you guys have any success stories to share, you can go to 4hourworkweek.com/success. Actually, that's where you can tell me about it, and I would love to hear it, because that's going to be a very meaty book. But in terms of new concepts, like completely new directions, there are a few books that I'm taking notes for, but primarily...
Can you hint at all?
No.
4-hour meditation?
No.
Four-hour sex?
No 4-hour.
That might be a good seller.
Yeah. 4-hour sex. There's already a chapter for that on 4-hour body.
Yeah, I know.
Several chapters. The general approach that I'm taking with my writing, and I'll be doing more of this in the blog posts, and I'm trying to do this with the podcast as well, is getting to the point where I'm extremely uncomfortable with certain aspects of just vulnerability that I'm putting on the page. So getting to a point where I'm sharing certain trials and tribulations and challenges that I've faced, that I might be, when I put it down, I'm like, God, I can't say that. And that's usually when I end up with my most well-received posts that help people the most.
Interesting, you should say this.
Yeah.
And so are you gonna, what would you do? I've been thinking about this a lot, actually.
Okay, why is that?
Because, so I have this other podcast that I'm sure a couple people have seen, the Foundation podcast, where I've done a bunch of interviews similar to what you did, but more in video form. And so, you know, I was thinking about, one, trimming those down, and then two, also doing like a traditional interview where I sit down with someone like, you know, like an Elon Musk, per se, like, and then in between those, just do these little weekly rants that are more just like just me getting something off my chest, but not in a rant like, I hate Comcast, like not something like that, but more just like what you're experiencing in life, like what you're going through, like some of the, like you said, the trials and tribulations that you're going through about different decisions that you have to make, and just like, and opening that up and actually setting that free and just seeing what people do with it. But I don't really want it to be public in a weird way. So this is kind of weird.
It's hard to get those.
Let me just walk this through, This is like, I don't even know that they belong to, if I want you to hear this, but I think that in a weird way, I want it to be a small group, like a private group, but I don't know how I would let those people in. Huh. So I would like it to be like, you know, a couple hundred people that you could like invite in and say, hey, if you're like been following the stuff I've been working on, if you care about these topics, like, you know, maybe you'll be interested in like these little rants and give me feedback and we can have a discussion. Like, it's really difficult when you put out a podcast, like say something like this or something that you do, to gather all that feedback and have a real conversation around it, right? Because I'm sure like anytime you put out anything on video, at least for me, I get a bunch of at replies on Twitter being like, great episode or this and that, or like this part. But there's no structured conversation there.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking like, maybe I could do something where it's like something really, like a small little barrier to get in, like a couple bucks a month some people would pay. But that means they care enough about the content to like charge for that and then have them come in and have a conversation around it. And I can interact with those people.
Yeah. Yeah,
anyway, I mean, you see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying.
Because like you have this issue too. Like you probably have out there like 10,000 people that want to talk to you all at one time, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't scale. You're one person.
Right.
So like how could you do this, what you're about to say you want to do, and in a more intimate environment where it's just your most loyal, hardcore fans that you could actually have a real dialogue
Well,
with?
You know, this is something I've struggled with. I think we've talked about this before, but I've toyed around with the idea of having... basically, what you're describing is sort of a membership of some type that allows people to get exclusive, whether it be access to, say, like a Q&A that you do once every week, month, whatever it might be, or video.
I'm sure people would love that, actually.
There are people who want it, and then there are people who say, a lot of people in my audience who say, absolutely don't do that, because you're going to end up in the, you're going to end up getting lumped into the sort of internet marketer group, like gray zone.
Yeah, but it's no different than like a band having like a membership area where they put out exclusive tracks for their most hardcore fans.
Yeah.
You know, like the way I look at it is like, I would always want the bulk of my content to be completely free. Like when I do those interviews on Foundation, there's some, that information should be free because it's helping enrich other people's lives, other would-be entrepreneurs that are listening to someone awesome.
Yeah.
So, the little tiny rants and bits in between, like what stocks I'm excited about, what little things that I'm into right now, what things are fun. Like, that's the stuff that I feel that, like, it takes the dedicated, hardcore people that, like, love what you do.
Yeah.
It's the same people reason people subscribe to your quarterly box. I'll tell you why. I get your quarterly box. We'll talk about this in a minute, because I started a quarterly box, too. But, like, I get your quarterly box. And the cool thing about it is I'm like, it's a little bit of you that I would not, we wouldn't talk about that.
Right.
And it's random crap.
Thank you.
No, but let me tell you, I'm always
that pleasure- crap is a mere $100 a quarter.
No,
you too could be a member.
No, I'm telling you, I'm always pleasantly surprised by what I get in it, because I would never buy that stuff for myself.
Right.
And like sometimes there's like a
that,
supplement
that
in there.
Double headed
like,
dildo, you really like that?
Right. Exactly. That was just for my box, right?
Yeah, that one. I always send them, have them send, I'm like, mark it for Kevin's box, send two of those.
The weirdest things. Huge dildo. It's just saying, I'm just saying that like you live an interesting life. You run into really interesting people. You have crazy thoughts. Like if you got to sit here, you would see that when the cameras aren't on, I'm like looking around his books and shit. And like you write all in your books. You have these little meticulous notes, and you have all these weird thoughts that people want to see more of that.
Yeah.
And so this would just be a channel to do that.
No, I hear you. Well, let's talk through this a little bit, because I mean, I'd love people's feedback too. I suppose both of us would. Just use hashtag random and then hit us on Twitter, I suppose would be the easiest thing.
How about hashtag random show? Because random would might probably do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, random show. So hashtag random show. But so I tried to do very briefly, I used a WordPress plugin for this. So I didn't build it out for a membership site. And I was going to charge $5 or $10 a month.
Was this the 4-Hour Body stuff that you're talking about back in the day?
No? I don't remember the theme.
I thought you were doing something.
I did it for such a brief period of time. I don't even remember, because I did it for a few weeks. And what I found is, the lower price point is very problematic in my experience, where you end up with, for instance, I charged $10,000 a seat for this event that I threw a couple years ago, right? Almost no complaints. And it also gave me sort of a lot of margin to play with making the product, meaning the experience, fucking ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I mean, super over the top. At $10 a month, though, there was a very high level of, there were people who wanted to talk for hours, you know, via email or chat or whatever it would be, about what was wrong with it.
Hours and hours.
And so I got about 2 weeks into the first month and I was like, fuck it, I'm canceling, I'm refunding all of you. Forget it, I don't wanna do it. And so I don't know what like the sweet spot is.
That's interesting.
For getting the diehards, right? It's
the ones that aren't.
I'm conflicted,
like,
because you don't want to make it overly cost prohibitive, but you also want the people to be truly interested in the experience you're describing.
Right. And that's what you're
like,
saying.
Not just like, fuck it, I'll do it. Like,
you're
I have infinite time, let me put $5 on it.
You're saying at $5 somebody's gonna be like, now that I have your ear, let me pitch you for X, Y, and Z, or like,
right,
how can you help me with this? And you're just like, it's not about that.
Right. So setting the expectations.
I don't know, man.
Setting the expectations and price point, I think, is challenging. But who knows? If you guys would like that type of subscription offering from either of us, let us know your thoughts. I'm at T Ferris, 2 R's, 2 S's, at Kevin Rose, right?
1 R.
All single consonants in his name. So you've mentioned before we started rolling some new apps that you were toying around with.
Yeah.
Tell me about them.
So I've got a couple things. One of the things that I'm trying to do as I'm building out this new company is that, as with any founder that has only 5 people total, you're wearing a bunch of different hats. And so I'm constantly running into different people throughout the week or month that I need to keep tabs on. I mean, I want to follow up with them. I want to check in with them from time to time. And
watch bloggers, retailers, biz dev partners,
you
whatever.
You name it. There's like 100 already that I have, right?
Yeah.
But how do you make sense of all this stuff? And then like, and in your professional life, like some people use like LinkedIn, they like comment on each other's stuff, but like, how can you do it in email? I want it all done in email. I want a reminder if I haven't spoken with someone in a certain amount of time. I want to see if I have, I just had one other guy that's helped me out with biz dev now. I want to see when he's last contacted one of these people.
Okay.
I want to be able to put them in buckets so I can see like how many times we've had a touch point with them or
kind of met like cold, warm.
Right, exactly. It actually does that. Cold, warm, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then it'll show you when you had a meeting with them last. And so I found two solutions for this. And I'd love, again, if people have others, like hit me up on Twitter. But Contactually, okay. Which is pretty cool. So you can basically create a bucket. Let's just say it's like, investors, potential investors. You create a bucket, 30 days. And then you drag your contacts. You link your Google, so you author your Google account with it. It pulls in all of your emails, and it looks at all your emails. And then you basically drag them into this bucket, and then if 30 days has gone by and you haven't contacted one of those potential investors, it pings you and says, hey, you should reach out to this person. It's been 31 days now.
Huh.
And so I'm starting to create all these different buckets. That's one that I used, and then I started using RelateIQ.
Yeah.
RelateIQ is pretty badass. Like, their plugin is by far the best. Like, it plugs into Gmail, and you can see right at the bottom of the Gmail, you can choose, like, follow up in 1 week, 2 weeks, whatever. It'll show you really like awesome red receipts and things like that as they're happening. It's just a little bit more power. They can do more kind of scripting in it.
Do you know of any tool? So the one need that I have not been able to satisfy, and maybe you have a solution for this, is just kidding. This tea is making me frisky. So the one need that I haven't been able to satisfy, which has been a problem really. It's not a need. It's a problem that I haven't been able to solve. Is if I fly to God knows where, and it's like I have a layover in Atlanta or in Charleston or whatever, and I'm like, God, you know what? Like, I wish I knew which of my friends were here, or which of my even like kind of secondary contacts we're here, so I could call them and have dinner or whatever.
Yeah, Human does that.
Human?
Yeah.
It'll parse you.
Humin.
Yeah.
It's this kind of a replacement address book for the iPhone.
Okay.
And you can go in and say, when I'm in a certain area, which of my friends are also here.
It uses the iPhone.
Yeah, use the iPhone to do that. And so it'll let you know like who's around.
Interesting.
You obviously have to get your friends on it. More and more people are starting to switch over. It's interesting. I installed it just to play around with it.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sold yet, but I think it's it actually also updates like your address book with like photos from Facebook and their photos from Twitter, and like they can go in. Let's say, here's a great example. This is one thing I think is really cool about it. Like, let's say you sign up for an account, okay? So it knows that we know each other because our address books are synced and I have your number and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And let's just say that I'm using that app and you know, a month goes by and you're like, you know what, I'm gonna change my email address. I just got a new one. You type it in there in Humin, you click save, and then all of your friends that have Humin get that updated email address right in their address book, or photo, or phone number, or anything that you change.
That's cool.
It's pretty cool.
Huh.
Anyway, it's like one of the many apps that has tried a really tough space.
The address
book's a tough one to crack.
I have the anti-Humin as an app.
Okay.
That is probably gonna get me in trouble.
It blocks.
It's called Robot. No, it's not called Robot. I have something to show related to robots and humans. But
can I have some more of your tea?
Yes. I filled this one up.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah, that one's toast.
It's my dog.
I pulled a handful of hair off. It's a nice single steeping of toaster
Labradoodle.
Hair. Yeah. It's hypoallergenic, you know.
Yeah.
What the fuck was I saying? Oh, yeah. So there's an app. There's an app called Burner.
Oh, I know Burner.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of people don't know about. Okay, so why do you know Burner?
Because it's a fucking Burner, dude. Everybody knows about it.
So Burner, for those of you who don't know, because I only found out about this a few weeks ago.
It's, by the way, I found out you can be traced with Burner.
You can be traced with everything. How do you get traced with Burner?
Because you're on a freaking phone, they know that it's tied to your.
Well, I'm not using it to buy like warheads.
What are you using it for? That tell people what it is. First, all right, so
you lost. So Burner allows you to create basically throwaway or temporary phone numbers for calling or texting. So if you like, who knows whether it's like you buy something on eBay, you don't want to give your phone number
really
to some
like
random
idea.
Stranger. What's up?
I love the idea of using it for something like eBay.
Yeah, eBay, or I mean, obviously people are using it for dating and stuff like that too, online dating, whatever. But it provides you with a buffer where you're like, okay, I do want to talk to someone, but I don't want to give them my phone number that I can never retract, right?
Is this on the phone? Like, is it working on the iPhone now?
Yeah, works on the iPhone.
Oh God, I need to get this.
Yeah, and you can,
I heard about it, I never used it. I could create
5 new phone numbers right now.
Really?
And you just buy credits.
And then you can just like, just toss them and it burns them and they're gone.
They're gone, yeah.
You said you're not using it to buy warheads.
No, so because this type of technology, these anonymizing technologies can be used for evil purposes, right?
Yeah, well, this one's, yeah. I looked on their website and they said that they comply with all, like, government, and they don't, so you can still get screwed if you're doing something super legal, as you should.
Yeah.
But I was going to ask you, this is a real question. It's a joking question, but it's also a real question.
Oh, I'm excited.
Do you think... Because you know some shit. Like, you know, like, how to work the underground shit and all that stuff. Could you buy, like, a weapon, like a nuclear weapon or something like that?
Nuclear weapon would be very hard.
You think it'd be hard?
Of course it'd be hard.
How about just getting a little plutonium?
You know, I would have to think about it. I've never looked for it. I mean, there are markets for these things, right? I mean, there are buyers and sellers of illegal arms. So, ostensibly, if you have enough money and the right contacts, you could have that conversation, and you could immediately have like a black hood thrown over your head and get thrown in the back of a white van too.
Why?
But yeah, I am fascinated by this stuff though. We got war by other means.
This is why
Masters of War, given to me by a chess teacher / Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt.
How to buy nuclear weapons.
How to buy, right. The Art of Deception. This is Mitnick. I've had this for years, but this is sort of social engineering stuff. Those are some of my notes. Plutonium, no idea, I've never tried. I mean, can you get yourself into a lot of trouble? You heard about the, was it Silk Road? The guy who finally got
himself
thrown in jail? Just down the street.
Did you? Yeah, it was right here, right? Like literally a couple miles from my house. But you heard the setup, right? How he got caught? Like some former business partner, he hired an assassin to kill him?
It went a little deeper than that. Like, well, that was true. He did do that, and they caught that guy, and it's like some 50-year-old
But they staged the death because they needed
they
the photo.
It and then traced it back to his laptop here in San Francisco, and they staged like a mock lover's quarrel in the library.
That's right. It happened
so
right here.
So he had his laptop open
on
the administration page of the Silk Road. These FBI agents start a fight behind him to distract him, and when he looks up,
didn't like a woman
comes and grabs him,
and then the woman grabbed the laptop
while it's still open and runs it out to the door to the FBI guys who are like copying the hard drive.
Wow.
It was intense.
Like, I didn't know that went down.
Yeah, and it went down like literally like a few blocks from where I live, which is not far from here. It's
so
crazy.
So I guess the point being,
close your laptop, people, if you hear a fire breaking out. I mean, that's the takeaway here.
Yeah,
right?
That's one for those criminally minded who are like,
those FBI.
No more public libraries for my illicit activities. But the point being, I mean, I think that, there are markets for everything, obviously. If you really want to depress yourself, I had to stop reading it because it got so depressing, but there's a book called McMafia, and it's about organized crime around the world and like the systems that they use. So depressing, though. Like, God, just if it's kind of like Taken on steroids, like that whole situation.
Crazy.
Like all the trafficking and whatnot. Terrible stuff.
All right. Now, what else you got to talk about?
I don't know.
I got some more stuff.
Is that the royal you, meaning you? No, what do you have?
It's my little list of stuff.
All right, well, here, I'll mention a couple things. So people have asked me about mics. I haven't talked about this one. I use this all the time. That I use for podcasting. So this is the, it's by a company called Yellow Tech. It's German, and this is the IXM. So this is an all-in-one mic that levels without using any external software. And so it's a really, really cool piece of hardware and ends up sounding like you're in a studio half the time, even if I'm recording an intro or something like that.
Is it wireless?
In airport. No, it's not wireless. You just have to pop the card out. Or you can, or you can plug it in. So it's all self-contained. So I could go like man on the street and do an entire interview, get hours and hours and hours, tens of hours if the card's big enough. And
so is this what you use your podcast with? You give one of those to the other person?
I will use this if I'm just recording intros or sponsor reads or something like that. When I'm in person, like what I did with Arnold Schwarzenegger, then we had just an H4N. It's a Zoom recorder, and then two old school like stand-up
stage
mics. Why not
use these, though?
Because these do not, I mean, I could use these, but these are somewhere between $600 and $1,000, and the other mics are $50.
Yeah, but then you pay for the expensive recorder, which is like $600.
The recorder is not that much. It's about $300.
The only thing I don't like about this is all the start and stop buttons are like right on the freaking mic.
Yeah, what if
mic?
You accidentally hit the...
Yeah.
Yeah. Holding it. You have to be careful. I've never had an issue with it because I don't hold it like this, like a flute with my fingers on the buttons. I mean, if you hold it like that, it's fine. But yeah, this is one of two or three mics that I use most often. And people say they prefer doing in-person interviews, i.e. interviewers will say, oh, it's always better in person. I find that less can go wrong if you record over Skype with Ecom call recorder and two cheap USB mics. So I generally prefer that.
So do you have a dial-in number for Skype? They call in?
I just do Skype. No, straight Wi-Fi.
And they have Skype too?
Right.
But you don't turn on video, you just have it over audio?
No, I don't use video because I'm not recording the video and it'll
just eat
the bandwidth.
It doesn't cut out on me at all? It cuts out on me all the time.
It's
solid. Is it?
It's pretty solid. Of 60 or so interviews that I've done, I've probably done 40 via Skype and I've maybe had two issues. And it's almost always because the other side has something like Dropbox or Evernote that's syncing and they forget to pause it. Mm. That's almost always the issue. But this is a great mic. If you have a bit of budget and you travel a lot, I will just kind of take this with me when I travel and I'll stick it in my carry-on.
And you happen to want to start a podcast.
Is it a dynamic?
What's that?
Is it a dynamic mic or directional?
So it's, there are if I have a separate container that has different mic heads.
You can change it.
You can change it.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah, for the directional or dynamic, etc. Yeah, it's very cool. So that's that. Cool. Your list?
So let's talk about... This, at the risk of sounding like a hipster, I'm going to throw this out there. I just got, for the first time, a record player.
Okay.
And so let me tell you why. It's not the usual reasons because I think like this is cool.
Yeah.
Like record players like have been like a hipster thing in San Francisco for quite a while, like collecting vinyl, like all that stuff. My buddy, Josh Cook, you know, he was selling his record player with some speakers. And he was like, hey, is this something you want to buy? And he gave me a demo at his house. And one of the things that I realized about record players is that it is a great way to break up your day. Because it forces you to get up and flip the record. And it also forces you to listen to an album like all the way through.
Yeah.
And so I was on Spotify, and I've been using Spotify and Sonos and all that. And it's so easy to be like, ah, next song. Ah, I hate that song. Oh, next song. Record player, it's all much more difficult. I mean, you have to get up there, take up the needle, set it back down. And there's something really zen about just like putting on an album, and especially an old album, and like listening to the original way it was pressed, like in mono.
Right.
And there's a certain warmth that comes out of the speakers that you just don't get with like digital audio.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I started getting to some really good jazz and just some like some old Beatles records, and
Sinatra.
I have Sinatra Live. You were at my house. You saw. What did you think?
I thought it was really fun. I like the experience of listening to albums, and I like the fact that musical artists had to think about the composition of a side A and a side B. In the same way that an author has to think about like the composition and order of chapters within a section.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think of my childhood not in terms of singles, but in terms of like Appetite for Destruction. I know, starts at Welcome to the Jungle, side A ends at Paradise City, and then so on and so forth, right? And sort of, I kind of know the numbers of all the tracks, and that's the story that it kind of takes.
Right.
And so it's almost like a screenplay. I mean, if anyone has seen Adaptation or read any of Robert McKee's story seminar, he talks about sort of the flipping of different emotions as you go from scene to scene, and you have that type of experience in an album that's constructed well. So I enjoyed listening to old music on an older form of player.
Mm-hmm.
That made sense to me.
Yeah, and I also
listening to like live Sinatra from 71 or whatever it was that we listened to.
Yeah.
Made a lot of sense, and I like the tactile experience of it.
So do I.
I'm trying to use my hands more, just meaning getting away from like the 8 to 18 inch visual range. Mm-hmm. That's another theory I have, is that a lot of eye trouble that is developing in people at earlier ages now is from having this limited depth of field mm-hmm. for hours and hours and hours every day.
Well, they tell you, I mean, I've seen where doctors have said, you know, every once a half hour or whatever, stare at something far away and like let your eyes like readjust. And I think that this is, for me, records has been this like thing where I put it by my computer, so it's in my office, and then it forces me to get up, walk around a little bit, flip the record, get something to drink, drink more water, get my head out of email for a second. Like, there's something to be said about just that alone. Forget like the music and all the other stuff. Like just breaking the monotony of all that stuff.
Little time out.
I also bought Michael Jackson Thriller, unopened from the 80s. I found it for $50 on Amazon. Never been opened. That was my favorite album as a kid. We used to listen to it on record. So like I'm literally going to open.
Is that like the white jacket? This one? Or no? What's the cover look like?
Yeah, he's like off to the side.
Yeah, in the white jacket.
Yeah, and so I'm going to open that up for the first time and like have like a glass of scotch and put it down and like relive my childhood right there.
Amazing. You know what you should get for vinyl also is some Queen.
Oh yeah, that'd be great.
Or you could get one of my favorites when I was growing up and I had those mini LPs designed for kids, Disco Disco Duck, also a winner. I highly sang in the voice of Donald Duck.
Those are too expensive, those vintage Disco Disco Ducks.
You know that Ernie's Rubber Ducky, like
Rubber Ducky,
that debuted on the Billboard charts, which by the way, the voice of Jim Henson did that voice for Ernie, and it debuted on the Billboard charts at like number 18 out of 20 or something when
it came
out.
Are you serious?
Yeah, Rubber Ducky.
Didn't the Rainbow Connection get on Billboard as well?
Oh, I don't know. Probably it did. Could.
That's crazy. Yeah. Donald Duck.
Disco Disco Duck.
Disco Disco Duck. You know Donald Duck was
I think
was
you
a
should
Nazi.
Get some like THP, THC toothpaste or mouthwash and then listen to Disco Disco Duck.
Why mouthwash or toothpaste?
I just like the sound of it. That seemed like a faster uptake. I mean, you could smoke it too, but I just thought THC toothpaste sounds kind of funny.
Do they even have THC toothpaste?
I doubt it. It'd be very wasteful. You like just spit out 90% of it.
Yeah, I guess so.
Anyway, wait, who is a Nazi?
Donald Duck.
Have you been reading YouTube comments again?
Dude, have you watched the videos on YouTube of Donald Duck as a Nazi?
No.
Are you kidding me?
It was like Nazi propaganda with...
With Donald Duck.
With
like saluting and everything.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Yes, he was a Nazi.
Well, Donald Duck wasn't a Nazi. Who made Donald Duck a Nazi?
Well, it was like some deal they had with Disney or something.
I'm not sure if it was Nazi propaganda or if it was like war... propaganda for the U.S.
No, it wasn't.
Using him as a foil.
It was using him as like a funny, like easy...
No, you gotta read it. It was pro-Nazi. Like he's saluting.
I've
seen
the pictures and the screenshots. But.
I read something about how... This was before... Apparently, they were doing this before... What I read was that it was before everyone realized how horrible Hitler was. So it was there was a brief period of time... I don't know if I'm totally screwing this up. But from what this one article I saw, there's a brief period of time where like the Nazis were not necessarily a bad group yet. Like it was a party that was doing, you know, changing it up and like
funny marches.
Yeah, and then funny marches, and then everything went to hell. But that's what they said was made during that time. So I don't know.
Well, this was Disco Disco Duck before Donald turned.
I think you're supporting Donald Duck.
What else you got?
Okay, so let's see what else. I think that's it. I have one more thing I want to talk about. I'm going to give Tim a link when he posts this on his blog for a walking treadmill desk that I have that I absolutely love. It's a little hard to adjust up and down, but once you adjust it one time, like you're good to go. It's these treadmill desks, they're great because I can set my laptop down. I can just bang out a bunch of emails. I actually can do work at 2 miles per hour, and I have my Fitbit on, so I'm getting steps at the same time. I don't set any incline. It doesn't do incline. It's just flat. And then I said 2 miles an hour, and I'll do it 2 hours a day, and you'll rack up 15,000 steps in no time. Yep. It's awesome. The thing is, I found them anywhere from $700 to like $4,000. This one, I kind of like, it was $1,500. It had a lot of great reviews, and I was like, well, you know what? I'll roll the dice. Like these nice ones look really nice.
Got it on Amazon?
Yeah, I got it on Amazon, and I got it. And honestly, it's a great it's a great treadmill. Bluetooth syncs with your phone if you want to do that. It does everything, and it's like $1,500. It was, which is expensive, but it's not crazy like $5,000 expensive like some of the crazier ones.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll put a link to it on your blog. All right. The last thing is that New Year's resolution, since we really haven't covered them this year, I'll talk about one of mine. One of the things I want to do is really track all of the drinks that I have this year. So just drinking.
Which I should say is not intended to necessarily reduce the number of drinks you have.
Step one is track. Step two is reduce.
Okay.
It's a two-step process.
How are you doing so far?
I've tracked, and now I'm starting to reduce.
How many drinks did you have in the last 4 weeks? Or last month?
Last month. Last month was a difficult month. It was tough. It was tough because, listen, I went to Napa for a weekend, and I went to this wine tasting event where they do this like crazy thing. This is sound douchier the more I go on. And I also was traveling. I went to Germany and Switzerland. And so I was gone for another week and a half.
Those come with serious obligations.
I mean,
there was beverage obligations
that we had. I drank a lot of drinks last month.
How many drinks?
I don't want to talk about it.
Oh, come on. This is in the name of science.
Okay, in the name of science, let me pull up my spreadsheet. Get Google Sheets. It's a standalone app now. It's great. And you can just like keep your spreadsheet on you. Oh, you know what? I'll also share my spreadsheet on your post as well. And so you can open it up, copy it. You can just save it as your own. I'll set it as read only to say save as my own. And then you'll have my spreadsheet. It does all kinds of things. Like it tries to guess how many drinks you'll have next month. I made it all nuts.
K Rose's boozometer.
So here's what it does though. Here's what I consider. Good days are drinks with less than two drinks. I consider that a good day.
How many drinks have you had? Drinks with less than three drinks?
Less than two drinks.
No, I know. Days.
Good days last month?
Yeah, days. All right. Now we're on the same page. Eight. Days. Good days.
Eight.
Okay.
That's good.
All right.
Neutral days, I consider 2.1 to three drinks.
Oh, okay.
Okay. That's neutral. It's like, I had 2.5 drinks, you know? Yeah. So it's, you know,
you're
it's
counting wine and
I'm counting wine.
And beer,
yeah. One beer is one drink. One glass of wine is one drink. One shot or mixed drink is one drink. Neutral days, I had six.
Okay.
I had 17 bad days.
What's bad?
Bad is more than three.
Three to infinity?
Yeah, three to infinity. So, but I mean, a lot of these were like three, you know.
How many total drinks did you have last month?
I'm not talking about totals right now.
Are you still trying to average out the amount you have so that if you have an average of X drinks a month, you consider it a good month?
Yeah, so I'm doing an average as well. Last month was not a good month. So my average, like I'll give an example. First day of this month, I had 0.75 drinks. Second day, 1.5. Third day, 1.5. Fourth day, 1.425.
1.425?
I had 1.5 glasses of wine, and I accidentally hit it with my elbow and knocked it over when I had a little bit left. So I had 1.425. I'm being dead serious. I'm weird like that. Tonight, I haven't had any, and I won't have any. Day, I had 3.45.
Night is young. All right. So track and then reduce.
Yeah.
How are you planning on reducing?
I want to get
down. I think your numbers indicate, fair to say, three digits.
Oh, I'm not doing any of this fair to say shit. Fuck you. I know what you're trying to do. No.
More than 100, less than 1,000.
No. I'm just saying that, like, my goal is to have, like, four. I want to average out at about a little under two drinks.
Okay.
Per day.
Yeah.
For the course of a month. That's where I'm. Right now, I'm right about two. So I want to average, I want to go a little under. So I'm trying to drink like 1.5, then obviously go with a bunch of days. Like this entire week, I'm not going to drink before I leave on this trip.
Did you wire the $1,000 to Donors Choose last time you lost this bet?
The one month of, I don't think I technically lost that bet.
Yeah. Yeah, you did. All right.
Was it $1,000?
Yeah.
We can do it next time. When we get done with this podcast, we'll do it and put my credit card
in. Okay. All right. Sounds good. So a couple of thoughts.
That's all I have.
These are, for those people who haven't seen these, so this is specifically for Arabic, but these are VizEd flashcards, VIS-ED.com. I still enjoy using paper. You don't have to. There are many options for using digital flashcards, but what I like about these, typically, and I haven't really dug into the Arabic all too much yet, but oftentimes they will have sample sentences on them. So in this particular case, it doesn't seem to be holding true that they have these sample sentences. But in Spanish, Japanese, I have these for I don't know, probably 12 languages, and they'll Jeez. Have sample sentences on the back for Spanish, German, Japanese, Chinese, Mandarin, etc. And I am going to be reviewing these, and then I thought I'd show you another fun thing for those language nerds out there, which is IPA flashcards. So what is, it's not Indian Pale Ale, it's the International Phonetic Alphabet. So the International Phonetic Alphabet, if you learn these various sounds, right, phonemes, like hello friend is written that way, that allows you to converse with people who are teaching any given language, if they're language teachers or linguists, and they can explain how something sounds. They can write it in a common tongue. This is just for pronunciation. And the reason that I've been thinking about all of this is I am going to Monterey, here in California, in the next few weeks, then 2 or 3 weeks, to visit these guys. So this is American Dream U, is a nonprofit organization that helps veterans reassimilate into civilian life, and it gives them specifically education and tools and resources for either becoming entrepreneurs or finding their dream jobs. And down in Monterey, unbeknownst to many people, is one of the most effective and famous language institutes in the world. And they send a lot of the top SEALs and whatnot to Monterey specifically to learn languages like Arabic before being deployed. Hmm. So they've refined their systems very, very rigorously. So I'm going to be...
Do you know any Arabic at all?
Maybe Kalim Arabi. No, not really.
Habubi.
Habibi. That means like my dear.
Yeah.
So a little bit. I have a little bit because I spent some time in Jordan.
What about shata?
Don't know that.
It means hot sauce.
It means hot sauce?
Yeah. How about zaytun?
No. That's the name of a restaurant on
means
Valencia.
Olive oil.
Oh.
And zayt is olives.
Oh.
Zaytun.
Oh, yeah? Is this in preparation for your trip to...
Dubai?
Dubai?
No, I live next door to my buddy Ramsey, and he just like would... try and teach me all day long.
I've got a little bit. I have a little bit, but I'm going to sit in on an Arabic class to see how they teach it.
Cool.
Which I'm very interested in. There are very many different types of Arabic. I'm most fascinated by Levantine Arabic, although one could argue that Egyptian makes more sense because that's what all the most of the movies are made in Egyptian Arabic. The modern standard Arabic is sort of a book speak. It's like Latin as far as I understand. Not really used in any native country, but check these guys out if you're interested in supporting vets. American Dream U is a very cool organization. And then this one I thought I would show off, which is fun. I was sent this by my friend Kevin Kelly. So this is The Silver Cord. This is a massive graphic novel, and it's about a war between humans, angels, and robots with human-like intelligence. Now, why would you pay attention to any such thing? Number one, the art is actually extremely good. You can see the paneling, lettering, the ink and coloring, everything is great. And Kevin Kelly is interesting for many, many reasons, but he was the founding editor of Wired magazine and is very well known. He's involved with the Long Now Foundation. He's an incredibly accurate futurist and technology predictor. I mean, very few people can match him. If you look at Kevin Kelly's videos from 5, 10 years ago, he's just nailing one instance after another of things that are only happening right now, and he can hit the timelines correctly oftentimes. And I interviewed him for a 3-part series on the Tim Ferriss Show, the podcast, but he sends out letters to his friends once a year sort of recapping the year and a trip that he takes with his whole family, and he sent that along with it, which I'm pretty stoked to check out. The other reason that interests me, of course, having experimented in publishing in different ways myself, is that this was financed by fans. So this was funded entirely by people who wanted to read it and then printed, I think, in Hong Kong. Beautiful printing. I mean, they did a great job. If you're looking for something to read, if you're hearing about artificial intelligence, the rise of the machines, the threat of artificial intelligence, and so on in the news, I haven't read this yet, but I suspect that there are some very interesting technological observations and also philosophical questions in this book, if it's Kevin Kelly's usual approach to things. So The Silver Cord is worth checking out. And
awesome. Sweet. Well, I don't have anything else. Do you?
That's all I got. Let me think. You were going to talk about quarterly.
Yeah. So I've got my quarterly box coming out. We mentioned Tim's earlier, his box full of crap. No, it actually is
quarterly.co/Tim, I think. Just search quarterly and then Tim Ferriss.
Yeah, I think mine's quarterly.co/Kevin or Kevin Rose. But I'm doing a $100 box, and I did one for this last holiday season. We had some really awesome stuff in there. And yeah, I'm pretty stoked because the cool thing, and I think you get the same kind of pull, is that you go into these manufacturers or whatever it may be, and you say like, hey, listen, I've got a bunch of like really kind of like influential tech people that are kind of watching what I do and they listen to my stuff. And I feel like that's what these people are that are watching the show here. And they typically give you the stuff at cost or like below cost to put in your box.
Yeah.
And so you actually put a lot more than the actual value of the box. So
oh, sure.
The boxes are $100 and I think I added up all of what I was able to put in the last box, and I'm not talking like retail price because that's always bullshit. Yeah. I actually went on Amazon and searched for it and like how much would this cost if someone were to buy this, and it was like $140 worth of stuff for $100.
And you can sometimes, what I've had a lot of fun with in working with Quarterly is when you go to a manufacturer or an artist or an author and you say, hey, I want to buy 2,000 of X or whatever your subscriber count is, once it gets to a certain point, you can very often do customized stuff. So, for example, I'll be right back. So this is one of my favorite graphic novels.
Oh yeah, I got one. This is one of your. Yeah.
You guys talked about this.
Oh, we did. All right. So I'll just mention it very, very briefly. I don't think I showed this last time, but so Simon, I think it's Bisley. It might be Beasley. Anyway, I was able to get a unique print run with original artwork just for the people who got it. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, check out Lobo if you haven't seen Bisley's Lobo.
Lobo's amazing.
Yeah,
fantastic one. So anyway, if you were denied a box around the holiday time because I ran out, I only had so many things I could give out. If you were denied one, we're opening it back up. Just do a search for it. We'll link it up in the show notes.
In the show notes. And if it's of interest, if you love the idea or hate the idea or somewhere in between of either of us or both of us doing some kind of subscription thing for like a couple hundred people or 1,000 people where we, I don't know, give unique access or goodies of some type to people, let us know. So hashtag random show on Twitter at T Ferriss, 2 R's, 2 S's.
At Kevin Rose.
At Kevin Rose. And as always, love your feedback. So let us know what you think.
Yeah, thanks for watching. See you guys. Thank you.